This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Matthew Dillon, co-CEO of the Organic Trade Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with OTA's Matthew Dillon next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 530 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. U.S. consumer demand for organic products is growing at a rate of over 5% and totaled over $71 billion last year. Matthew Dillon, co-CEO of the Organic Trade Association, says nearly 300 OTA members will be in Washington this week celebrating Organic Week and lobbying Congress for policy to advance opportunities for organic farmers and consumers. Dillon says the list of growers and consumers is growing.
Early on in organic, we had a lot of farmers and businesses that went all in. They were 100% organic or not. Over the years, we've seen more and more conventional farmers and conventional food manufacturers become interested, become curious, and decide that they want to put a toe in the market. Sometimes that toe becomes a whole leg or full body, but not always. And it's a great thing for businesses and farmers alike to be able to diversify their business and their marketplace, play different markets, in order to try to serve and delight the consumer who themselves have different reasons for buying food. And very few consumers are 100% organic all of the time. My household is not. We buy a lot of organic, of course, but we also have conventional food in the pantry. And that's how it is for most. So it's, I think, having that opportunity and that option to opt into voluntary regulations, because that's what organic is voluntary, whether you're a farmer or a business or a consumer, that's the beauty of it.
So is there the angst between the organic side of agriculture and the conventional side of agriculture that there might have once been?
Listen, honestly, tensions exist. There's always going to be tensions. Sometimes the tensions are as simple as neighbors worrying about spray drift that could impact their crop. And sometimes the tensions are about very limited funding of policy dollars, and everyone wants their little piece of diminishing sometimes USDA budget. But more and more, I think there is a recognition that agriculture at large can have multiple facets, and in some ways having those multiple facets makes our agriculture economy the most diverse. I think we're in this interesting phase, whether it's MAHA or environmental movements, where you do have folks wanting to make some choices to remove pesticides or not have antibiotics or growth hormones in their meat products. And that is a choice that consumers should have the opportunity to vote with their dollars, if you will, in the grocery store. It shouldn't be an all or nothing, right? We don't live in a society in which we're forcing folks that you can't do something on your farm as long as you're not impacting your neighbor. And so I think organic is that option. It's that option for folks who want to opt into an established market that delights consumers with some of the values that MAHA or environmental movements represent.
So how has the USDA's effort in organic assisted your industry, from the organic seal to even the new strengthening organic enforcement rule?
Oh, it's been huge. Organic would have never grown in the way it's grown from, relatively small industry that was a lot of regional farmers markets and food co-ops to this national powerhouse as well as an international exporter without the National Organic Program, without, first of all, the Organic Food Production Act and then the USDA National Organic Program. And the program pays dividends. For every dollar invested, we get about $3,000 in retail sales in the U.S. alone. So it's a pretty small, scrappy staff, about $24 to $25 million a year in funding, and they help make sure that consumers are getting what they pay for, that farmers in the U.S. have a level playing field with the competitors overseas, and we've had some challenges, but at the end of the day, the program assures integrity. It ensures that you can trust the seal, and in fact, for the first time this year, the Organic Trade Association launched a consumer campaign. It's going to be in retail as well as online and what they call an integrated marketing campaign, and the title of the campaign is The Seal Makes It Simple. And it is all about driving consumers to trust that USDA seal. 74% of consumers recognize and trust the seal. It's the highest recognized seal in the food sector. So we want to keep driving consumers to that seal, and we wouldn't have that without a strong USDA partnership.
There are some undeniable trends with regard to consumer attitudes toward food, and in fact, your growth rate at 5.2 is almost, if not over double what the overall market is seeing in growth.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of slowdown post-COVID. Of course, everyone during COVID was buying more groceries and going out to eat less, and so organic grew just as conventional did. And then there was a post-COVID slowdown, both due to people returning to restaurants, but also high inflationary pressures that, hey, we're often a premium product. The margin between organic and conventional has shrunk over time, but it's still there. And so we had a slowdown. We've seen a turning around in 2024 for sure. Early 2025 seems to be continued growth at 5.2%. There's categories in which, we're well over 10% of the marketplace. And we have categories that we're seeing some really exciting growth, like organic infant formula, toddler food, major drivers in the marketplace right now. All of our research would indicate that these emerging generations of millennial and Gen Z who are going to have the power of the purse, they already have a lot of power, but going to have it even more as older folks like me spend less, and they love organic. They trust it even more than boomers and Gen X, and they are looking for it already for their infants and children.
So how did millennials and Z and X and these younger generations, what seems to motivate them? How are you reaching them with your message?
It's a really interesting thing. There are a lot of brands and movements out there that believe the regenerative movement, for example, regenerative ag movement, whether it's conventional or organic, has this belief that they can tap into consumers' interest in soil health, in the environment, and trying to steward natural resources in a more sustainable way. And I believe there's some truth there, but the data that we have working multiple years of consumer research with Euromonitor shows that consumers across all generations are still primarily driven by what's good for them and for their families. They're driven by concerns about whether it be, as I mentioned, antibiotics or growth hormones, artificial flavors or synthetic additives. Those are still the main drivers for folks seeking organic, is to try to remove those attributes from the food that they consume. There is starting to be some difference where we're seeing millennials and Gen Z have more of these aspirational values, where they also care about the future of the planet and climate change. It's not the primary driver. The primary driver really is more aligned with the MAHA movement kind of type goals. That still is what's moving the sector forward.
Is there definitive science that says an organic food is better than a conventional, or is this really just about satisfying a consumer's preference?
Oh, you're throwing the hard questions at me, Jeff. So I think there's a combination of things. Listen, there's a reason that organic is not allowed to make health claims in the USDA National Organic Program. Not allowed to say that it's healthier than. You can, if defensible, talk about having higher rates of some nutrient density if you can prove it for your brand, but you can't say it across the board for organic. You can say that you raise your food without growth hormones or without antibiotics. I think when it comes to the science behind it, does that matter? It matters to some people. Some of the science shows multiple things, and certainly there's science that shows that we are probably using antibiotics in our culture, in our country, in multiple ways, and that can lead to problems for people. It can lead to problems for antibiotic resistance. So whether a consumer's choosing it for their health or for other reasons, at the end of the day, it is up to them. I don't think it's really tough to do scientific studies where you compare one group to say, okay, this is a group of people who've never eaten meat with growth hormones, and this is a group of people who has. It's pretty tough to have a smoking gun there. At the end of the day, it's got to be up to the consumer about what their concerns are, what evidence they believe they can find in the scientific literature, and what they want.
It appears still to be a matter of choice. And if that's what the consumer chooses, then we have the means in the U.S. to be able to provide it. Now,
one thing, Jeff, on that. There's a report that came out in George W. Bush's administration. He had a president's cancer panel that was looking at increases in childhood cancer. And that report ended up not coming out until the first year of the Obama administration, but it was done under George W. Bush. Series of physicians, and what they said was that there is increasing evidence that childhood cancers are related to environmental toxins, whether it be cleaning products in the home or pesticide residues. And they did recommend in that cancer panel report that parents should feed their children produce grown with fewer pesticides. They did not say go out and buy organic, but they did recommend parents buying produce with less pesticide exposure. So there's been, even in a fairly conservative physicians council in a Republican administration, some indication that this is of concern. We are seeing increasing rates of cancer. I mean, there was a big article in the news last week about cancer rates in Iowa, for example. Farmers, I mean, my community in Nebraska, high rates of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma on farm families. So there are some concerns. It's not about consumption. It's more about exposure in those communities. I don't think we can ignore that. Does it mean it needs to be all or nothing, that we need to stop spraying pesticides tomorrow? No, that would be horrible on multiple fronts. But we should be looking at how do we mitigate that and what are those impacts, I believe, especially for rural communities.
So then we go out of the skillet and into the fire with the discussion. And last week we had Pam Marone here. And the frontier of agriculture appears to be not from chemistry, but from biology. The biostimulants, the microbiome, and the soil. I'm even interested, if we're from the USDA perspective and from the Organic Trade Association, how do you embrace this bio side of agriculture? And especially, I would add on to that, genetic engineering versus genetic modification, because there's a difference.
When it comes to biologicals, I think there's a lot of opportunity for some of those companies, and Pam's worked on providing materials for the organic sector. I think, you know, Bayer and Corteva would love to be able to produce something that the organic sector could also use. We have a very strict process, nationalist, kind of looking at what we can spray and not spray in our crop production, generally no synthetics allowed. But a lot of these biologicals could move through that process quite easily and be allowed. There's already biologicals allowed in organic. So there's an opportunity there. And I think it's good for all of agriculture. Certainly some of the companies are doing it because it creates less of a regulatory burden, less cost in getting through a system. But I think it's also not that we've reached the limits of chemistry, but we're up against some guardrails that are making it tough. And we do have some serious weed resistance from some of the chemistry. And so it makes sense to me that we're looking more at biologicals, and especially as we learn more about soil health and the importance of microbial communities in nutrient use efficiency and whatnot. So I applaud it, and I think some of it will absolutely get into the organic sector. Now, when you get to genetic modification, the answer to your question is pretty simple. The law excludes it. I mean, the law is a clear exclusion on genetic modification. I don't see that changing. This is a standard that is owned by the USDA, and then by stakeholders. And the stakeholders include consumers. It's hard for me to imagine a world in which the stakeholders of consumers would ever say, okay, we think there's a reason for GMOs to, or CRISPR, or some of the new genetic technologies to be allowed in organic. It could happen. I don't see it happening. We are not promoting it. We are not pushing for genetic engineering and organic because we don't have any stakeholders who are asking for it. It's not been something our membership or the community at large is asking for.
So from the domestic side of the business, $71.6 billion of consumer spending toward organics. What about the globe?
Well, there's opportunity for growth in kind of two different directions. And I'm going to take the more controversial one here to start with, Jeff. You might notice I don't mind jumping into the controversy a little bit. Organic is still very much dependent on imports of things we can grow here in the U.S., including we import a lot of organic soy and corn for animal feed. We import at least $500 million worth of organic beef a year into this country. The majority of the beef we sell, organic beef we sell in this country, is imported. There is so much opportunity to onshore that organic production, and that's one of the main things that OTA will focus on at Organic Week. We're focusing on it in two ways. One, we have to prevent foreign fraud, and my senator, Senator Ricketts, as well as Senator Tina Smith from Minnesota, have a bill called the Organic Import Verification Act to require testing of some of those imports to determine if they're fraudulent. We have strong evidence that they are, just based on acreage not matching yield from some of these countries, and we hope to better address it through fraud prevention. But number two, we need infrastructure. We have a different scale of infrastructure than large-scale conventional. I mean, if people went to a processing facility for organic dairy compared to conventional dairy, the volumes are not even comparable. So we're also going to be introducing something called the Domestic Organic Market Expansion Act. I can't tell you yet which representatives, although we do have both Republican and Democrats on that. We are looking to make small investments in on-farm infrastructure because a split operation has to have a dedicated, you know, storage facility for the organic production, different processing facilities. We're looking for some on-farm grants as well as some matched funding in processing to expand that domestic opportunity and capture that high-value market that right now is overseas. And that is priority number one, even before even thinking about exports. But we do have exports. We are focused on exports. OTA does trade missions all around the globe. And our members come with us, and we set up at trade shows, and there is strong interest in the USDA organic label. In certain marketplaces, it's seen as a status symbol. So in United Arab Emirates and in Asia, the USDA organic logo, we do testing with those consumers as well, and they highly value that U.S. organic logo. They're willing to pay a premium. It's seen as a status symbol and being high value.
Matthew, it's very clear that the Department of Agriculture has come alongside with some clear definitions. But there is this wild, wild west, I would describe, that's called marketing, where people make claims that may not be necessarily backed up, and they use words that may not have a clear definition. How is this marketing frontier a challenge for truth in the label and what the consumer really wants to know?
So, Jeff, yeah, there is always a bit of muddiness in marketing, let's just say. And one of the things that we've been challenged by in the organic sector for a long period of time is we have very strict rules about what we can and cannot say on our products that are overseen by the USDA and the FDA. You have other marketers out there using terms like natural, or the newest one, of course, is regenerative, sometimes sustainably grown, that are not defined by law, and that are used in what I would call romantic ways. And romantic being they're suggestive of something, but there's no way of verifying the reality behind it, the relationships behind it. Organic you might have some romance, but you also got relationships. You have a process that's transparent, that you can verify that the farmers and the manufacturers are doing what they're supposed to. You get into natural, regenerative, sustainable claims. Most of those you don't. There are some standards emerging in regenerative, but they're all different. And some folks are still using the word without any standards at all. And so that is a challenge. At the same time, to be candid, sometimes also just a distraction. Consumers don't understand what regenerative means. They're not hearing that word as much as the industry is talking about it. That doesn't mean it couldn't change and we shouldn't be paying attention to that competition. But at the end of the day, it's not something consumers are showing knowledge or a willingness to pay for relative to organic in all of our research. I will say that it is time for the FDA to update their green guides. Like, it's been time for a long time. And natural is probably one of the most irritating that we've had to deal with for decades now.
So let's go to Washington and talk about the MAHA Commission, pro or con with regard to the organic trade industry.
I don't think it's either pro or con. I mean, I think the organic, the MAHA caucus and some of the MAHA movement itself have differing opinions. Certainly in the MAHA movement, some of the consumer groups backing it, very much pro-organic. But within the MAHA caucus of Congress or RFK Jr.'s team directly, I think they're trying to walk a fine line. They're trying to be open to organic. They see value in organic, obviously, but they're not out there cheerleading and rushing to us with ideas for how they can further promote it. We did see in the MAHA report that came out some language around trying to simplify certification for farmers and make it more affordable. That certainly can help us expand access to more and more consumers and bring the price down. And we, in fact, are working on a piece of legislation with the Republican congressman to do just that, to simplify certification for low-risk farmers and make it less expensive and burdensome. So there's interest in the movement at large. We're happy to see people talking about some of the things that organic can offer. And again, it's a voluntary regulation. Honestly, I feel like that's where in D.C. we have the greatest opportunity. It's very clear that senators like Chuck Grassley or Senator Marshall are not interested in the MAHA movement constricting farmers' choice in the fields. Compulsory regulations are never popular in the farm community, and they're certainly not going to be popular in this administration. Organic is that voluntary regulation that businesses and farmers can opt into and deliver to some of those MAHA consumers their value, that value proposition, without it being compulsory, without forcing folks to do it. And I think that's where the trade association and our members, we have the greatest opportunity in D.C. to show up and tell our story and bring on some new champions in the MAHA caucus.
So since we're just leaning over the tailgate of the truck here and kicking dust, I'm going to introduce this thought. Do you see a day where the road of conventional agriculture and the road of organic agriculture might actually come much closer together?
I think they're coming closer together already. I mean, I think, again, this regenerative, while there's challenges with the marketing romance, as I mentioned, we welcome the idea of more and more farmers growing cover crops, creating, you know, better, more diverse crop rotations that are good for their soil. Hopefully there's marketplaces for them to do that. That's essential. You can't just ask a farmer to do a crop rotation and not have a market. We welcome more pasture and you know, other practices that we see in some of the regenerative. Organic does that as well. And hopefully some of them come along to us. But regardless, it's a great thing to see in conventional agriculture. My family, we did conservation crop rotations, which was a popular program back in the 70s and the 80s. It looks a lot like what some of the regenerative folks are doing today. Hopefully that can expand. I think it's good for handing down the farm better to the next generation, better natural resource stewardship. Whether they are the same, probably not. But I'm going to tell you something, Jeff, that I say, and I get in trouble for saying it all the time. In my ideal world, eventually there is just one agriculture, and we incentivize those who are doing things that are good for people, for planet, and there's some disincentives, whether it be through regulatory means or others, for those who are not doing as good a job.
Well, Matthew Dillon, we want to thank you for your work in agriculture on behalf of the Organic Trade Association. Thanks for being on this edition of Open Mic. Very enlightening with the information that you've had to share. It is open mic, and the guest always gets the last word.
Well, Jeff, thanks for having me. We're going to be in D.C. with over 280 of our members talking about all of these types of issues in conference and then going up to the Hill to advocate. And we're just always grateful for AgriPulse and the coverage you give to agriculture at large and also to organics. So thanks for having us.
Our thanks to Matthew Dillon, co-CEO of the Organic Trade Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.